from KQED.
I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, before the coronavirus pandemic, office rents in major California cities reached all-time highs and developers couldn't keep up with demand for space. Now, the trend toward working from home has forced many companies and workers to rethink where and how they work. It all could have profound implications for the real estate market, and a few businesses have already dropped expansion plans. Still, some experts argue that relying on Zoom meetings and remote work has its limitations, and companies will again fill office towers and campuses once it's deemed safe. In this hour of Forum, we dive into how the coronavirus pandemic could reshape the future of the office market and the way we work. That's next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Office buildings do more than just house workspaces. They have the capacity to redefine a city and how people live and work. For several years now, growing companies have used buildings to create an identity and an experience for their employees, whether that was in a sprawling business park or a downtown high-rise tower. But the coronavirus pandemic has rattled previous assumptions about office spaces that now sit largely vacant because of shelter in place, and some employers are ready to make working from home arrangements permanent. But other companies, such as Google and Bank of America, have outlined plans to bring workers back to the office. In this hour, we want to explore how long the current office market disruption will last and what changes could endure with it. Joining us is Allison Arieff. She's editorial director of SPUR, an urban planning advocacy nonprofit. And welcome, Allison Arieff.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. Also good to have Michael Covarrubias, who is chairman and CEO of TMG Partners, a San Francisco-based development company that has developed millions of square feet of office, housing, and industrial space in the Bay Area. And we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
And we'll say good morning also to Colin Iasicocci, who is executive director of CBRE Tech Insights Center. Welcome to the program. Good to have you as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Colin Iasicocci, are you with us? All right, we'll try to connect with him in the meantime. Allison Arieff, let me go to you and let me begin with you by just talking about what we were seeing before the pandemic. It was a tremendous amount of growth and development, and there were costs to pay, traffic, high cost of living, sustainability, all of that. I mean, SPUR's whole mission for a long time has been along the lines of rethinking how we plan cities, offices, and housing. This seems to be a pretty good opportunity to do all of that.
And yet it's very difficult to make quick interventions to land use. I think it's amazing to witness how quickly we went from companies saying that everybody needed to be at work every day and that creativity and productivity were only possible with everyone all being in one place at the same time to companies like Twitter and Facebook saying, actually, it's okay, you don't need to be here at all. I think that we'll see a lot of adjustment along the way. I don't think it will be these binaries of all or nothing, but it does beg the question, like, do we all need to go to an office every single day? The ramifications that that might have, even if we switch to a 4-day work week or a 3-day work week, could have tremendous impacts on commuting times, sustainability, repurposing of real estate for other uses. Obviously, housing is one of the things we need more than anything here in the Bay Area. So what if we could repurpose office space for that purpose?
Well, Michael Covarrubias, you seem to be of the mind that things are going to probably go back. It'll take some time. We're in, I think, what you've described appropriately as a kind of hole here. And yet once we come out, it'll be like when we came out post 9/11. It'll take some time, but things will go back to normal. And yet we keep reading about this hybrid phenomenon, this pivot toward more people working at home and many companies moving along that trajectory.
Yeah, I think that the basic concept that the world changes every time we have a crisis or a black swan is consistent. We talked about no more flying after 9/11, and we talked about no one going across the Bay Bridge during earthquakes. And we've talked about a major change in the way humans behave after every major problem we've gone through. And what I think, and I basically start off every speech these days with nobody knows anything because we don't know about the medical recovery. We don't know how fast it'll be. And therefore, we all make prognosis. But we're sort of in a black hole and we don't know where the edge of the cliff is. We don't know where the wall is. So we're making prognosis. But my belief is that human beings revert to the mean, that when we get out of this vaccination shortage, that people will want to be together and that the businesses that are successful were founded on the basis of they had to have connectivity with each other, they had to be creative, and they created a culture. That was 90 days ago. So in 90 days, I don't think we've wiped out what makes America and companies successful. There are attributes of the Zoom technology that are interesting and useful, but I don't think they undo what we were. So that's my basic thought.
Appreciate that basic thought. Let me get some basic thoughts from Colin Iacocci, who I think we now have with us. Colin, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. We had some problem, I guess, with your mic, but I'm glad to have you aboard. Colin, again, is executive director of CBRE Tech Insights Center. And let's get your take on this. There's been certainly a lot of stopping of development that was going up. A lot of the big campus ideas have been put on hold and maybe will be on hold for quite some time now. And when you look at the record, you've got things that were not only going up that have been stalled, but Google pulled out of Pier 70, Zendesk out of San Mateo, Kaiser out of Eastheim in Oakland. I mean, it would seem like we're moving into a completely different direction. Michael thinks we're going to go back eventually. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, ultimately we will go back to the offices, but that will be a different scenario than where we were pre a coronavirus. And the real estate market in itself was in a very strong position prior to this, pandemic taking hold. Our office vacancy rate in the city of San Francisco was under 4%. You know, rents were at all-time highs. Things were really going really well. And then the pandemic hit, and basically we're in a situation where there's so much uncertainty. And I think that's why you're seeing the pullback in demand. And, you know, whether that is going to be a long-term or short-term phenomenon, that's still really up in the air. As many companies are really trying to figure it out. Property owners like Michael are trying to figure it out is how do they make their buildings safer for people who do return to work. I think the whole situation is kind of in flux, but at the same time, the level of demand is going to be reduced probably through the end of the year because of that uncertainty. And because of that, the amount of supply will start to build and that may have some downward pressure on rents. And the whole idea of increased working from home was a trend that was certainly occurring slowly over time. And that also obviously very much accelerated over this pandemic period. And some of it will stick, but I don't think it's fundamentally going to be the end of the office as we know it.
Just to stay with Northern California for a moment, though, Colin, it's likely to have, by your judgment, more effect in terms of the shutdowns as far as space is concerned here in San Francisco than in, for example, Silicon Valley?
Yeah, and I think the reason that San Francisco will be more impacted is because we have a much higher concentration of tech startups who rely on venture capital funding. And we have also a lot of larger startups and newly public companies that businesses are targeted against the most weakened sectors of the economy, that being like transportation, hospitality, retail, restaurants, companies that focus their business around those particular industries. And those companies represent over 10% of the occupied office space in the city of San Francisco, where in the Silicon Valley area, that number is really more in the 2-3% range. And, we see them trying to conserve their capital, even though there is a lot of venture capital funds available. Investors are a little bit more reluctant to provide that funding. And many firms have, in fact, announced layoffs that they're going to occur, which would translate into a lesser need for office space, at least in the short term.
And Colin Iacocci is executive director of CBRE Tech Insights Center. And let me go back to Michael Covarrubias, who chairs and is CEO of TMG Partners. They're a San Francisco development company. What do you think, in, or what do you foresee in terms of development, Michael, especially in light of the fact that a lot of development, as I indicated earlier and alluded to, is simply not moved forward and is in a kind of stasis?
I think to have a good discussion, you really do have to separate the two subjects. There's what are we doing now while we don't have a virus and we don't know when this issue is going to be over with, and what is it going to be after that? And they are very different answers. Today, of course, everybody freezes when all the lights go up, and that's what we did. We turned off every light in the world. As Colin said, hotels, flight, restaurants, you bet, everything. So this doesn't count as answering the question of where is demand going to be. You have to be able to get to the other side of this black hole. And as I've said, I think that that which made the Bay Area great, and it's not just San Francisco, it's Silicon Valley, it's the East Bay, the three legs of the stool are Oakland, San Jose, San Francisco, and everything in between. Those are what draw people to the Bay Area, the lifestyle, the weather, the technology, the universities, the venture capital, all those things that we all have heard about. They aren't going away. And so, as I said, I think that the Bay Area will not go away. It will not become a wasteland because people want to live, you know, in their kitchen doing Zoom. So that's again, the same concept. But you really do have to separate today's anxiety and changes from what it's going to be when there's a vaccination.
Let me go back, Allison Arieff, to you. And Allison Arieff is editorial director of Spur, an urban planning advocacy nonprofit. We're going to have to see some changes made for safety and security. I mean, we're going to have to be looking, well, all kinds of questions with respect to ventilators or ventilation systems, I should say, and restrooms, where to eat. It used to be a lot of these places would just have meals delivered and so forth. All that has to be accounted for some way and is all part of the equation with respect to getting back to some semblance of normality. I would think that that would also have an enormous effect and impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I also just want to point out, because this discussion is definitely about white collar workers in Silicon Valley coming back, just to point out that this pandemic has also shown how bad the Bay Area is serving so many people. So we're focused on making everything back to normal for white collar workers, but let's also just keep in mind that this is really an opportunity to look around and see that what's been great for some has not been great for all. And as we think about how we might change our patterns, how could we do that that benefits more people? I think that the whole issue of kids not going back to school, for example, has really highlighted how much this workplace change has, you know, flexibility is important for all workers, especially as none of us know when our children are going back to school. Back to the notion of office interiors, we have many, many enormous challenges, though I'm hearing that there's some question that maybe the virus doesn't pass as easily on surfaces as people may have thought. That doesn't mean that people are going to feel immediately safe returning to workplaces. I've spoken with some people in China who returned to their offices and saw the number of precautions that were taken for people to return, and this was even a month ago. Everyone's temperature was taken when they entered the building. There were, you know, taped off squares in the elevator so you could control capacity within the elevator. Office workers were spaced out much differently than they were. There were no meals provided certainly within the office itself. So that would be a massive change for tech culture in particular. There was even little kind of do-it-yourself interventions like a little container full of toothpicks in the elevator, so you didn't have to push the button, you could push it with a toothpick. So there's sort of tiny interventions that can happen, but then there's huge ones that have to happen. Like many high rises are built so that windows can't open. And there has been a lot of evidence of the virus passing through HVAC and ventilation systems. And that's not an easy thing to fix. So there's a lot of work ahead in trying to figure out exactly how to make things safe again for people.
Well, I was also mindful of the fact that you were quoted in the New York Times, Allison, talking about, and this is where I began this whole discussion about what changes are possible or potential, about not being as car dependent. This could have an effect on traffic and public transport, and to a great extent, it probably will.
Yeah, if I can just make a comment on that. I mean, transit ridership is down around 95%. Wall Street said that people couldn't take the subway to work, just to give an example outside. BART just announced 15 moves to make transit safe for people to return. And we've got to get people back on transit. If everyone decides the default mode that the only safe way to get anywhere is in a car, then the traffic that we saw pre-pandemic is going to look like nothing compared to the traffic that we see post-pandemic.
Well, we want to hear from you. And one question for you to ponder and weigh in on here, you, our listeners, is you miss working. Do you miss working in an office building? And how would you change the office experience? And are you an office tenant or landlord? And if so, what are your concerns about the market? We do want to hear from you. You can give us a call right now. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. That number again for your calls, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. I'm going to mention landlords, Michael Covarrubias. I want to go back to you on this. Landlords are going to have to kind of adapt here. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, as Allison said, the supply and demand issues are significant, both the supply of how buildings are currently built and the demand for who's coming back. And I don't think that traffic is the issue for today, because not everybody's coming back even in this first recovery phase. You know, maybe 30 or 40% of your employees will come back because you can't put them next to each other. So there's going to be spacing, or they have family issues where they have to take care of their mom, or they don't have daycare for their kids. So the demand for the space is not going to be as draconian as it will be if we were all set free, so to speak. So I think that's a big part of it. And I do agree that the transit systems need to really make a statement to their customers that we're going to make this thing safe. We're going to have spacing. We're going to have, maybe reserve seating, for God's sake, is possible. So that's got to get fixed. But in the interim, again, the demand's not going to be overwhelming because not everybody's coming back, and I think we all know that. And then redesigning buildings for a future where there's no pandemic, I don't think is realistic. There's 75 million feet in San Francisco alone. You're not going to redesign all of those to accommodate a pandemic that doesn't exist. We are going to have to, as a country, build a reserve of the air thing. I forgot the V word, but the ventilators. We're going to have to build a reserve of PPEs, and that's going to be so that the next time one of these hits, we're not so far behind the curve. But you got to go back to the basics. Are people going to revert back to their normal desire to be together in a room, not in their kitchen, and not on Zoom? So that's the bet you got to make.
Well, don't you let me go back to you on this, Colin Yasuguchi. And Colin Yasuguchi, again, is executive director of CBRE Tech Insight Center. You're seeing already, as I indicated, a lot of pivoting. I mean, Twitter is giving their employees a choice. We were just talking on Twitter last segment with Congressman Schiff, but it's a good example of what that pivot might be. Stripe announced their fifth engineering. They got a hub. They're going back to a hub before the pandemic, but again, giving their employees a choice. And all of these big companies that are giving choices, Facebook, for example, or saying, you can work off remotely now, seem to be moving in a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, I would sort of reiterate what Michael said about returning to work, in the sense that a lot of what we talk about are kind of short-term scenarios we see playing out as people return to work in stages. And what becomes enduring long-term, is really unclear at this point in time, because certainly a city like San Francisco and even downtown Oakland for that matter, I mean, if you eliminate public transportation, those markets really are not functional at all, because driving cars just is not practical to, be able to reach those particular markets. But at the same time that we've found that the technology tools that many of the companies around the Bay Area are facilitating for those, not only in the US, but really globally, have been very effective, and that we will see more people working from home for you know, some sort of increased period, whether that's 1 day a week from no days a week or 2 days a week from 1 day a week or something like that, will certainly be the case. But again, you know, the sort of social and human behavior aspect of gathering in person and collaborating, that's something that is not going to go away. We just don't really feel comfortable and safe about doing that right now. But it's
not feel safe, but there's an innate need, some would argue, for that kind of human connection to actually be able to be interfacing in a workplace.
Yeah. So I think short term, you're going to see more remote work, and that's going to endure for at least through the end of this year, through we hit through the flu season. And it's probably going to revert something closer to normal than where we are right now over time in 2021.
Well, let me bring our listeners into this. In fact, I know some of you have some strong opinions on this, and we do want to hear from you. Do you miss working in an office building, and how would you change the office experience? And are you an office tenant or a landlord? And if so, what are your concerns about the market? You can give us a call right now, and I invite you to do that. The number to call toll-free is 866-733-6786. And I'll repeat that. It's 866-733-6786 for your calls. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. Comments coming in from Edward, who says, I hope most people realize they do not need to spend 2 hours a day, 10 hours a week, creeping along in traffic when they could be telecommuting. Wasn't this what the whole information superhighway thing was all about? And here's Joe, who writes, for the last 15 years, I've been working remotely. When I started, the adjustment took some time, but before long, all of the obvious benefits became clear. No time wasted commuting. I put in a longer and more productive workday without stress, distractions, and exposure to the usual seasonal illness. The butts in chairs model of the workplace is a 19th century relic. Take all of the useless office space and turn it into housing and services for the homeless. And let me read another comment here. We'll go to your calls when we return. I again invite you to join us by phone as well as by Twitter or Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or forum@kqed.org. Here's Luke, who writes, as a commercial real estate photographer based in San Francisco, I can say for certain that we're in for some interesting times. Nearly all of my commercial real estate clients have pretty much put the brakes on all their marketing and advertising campaigns for the year. Everything that I was working on prior to COVID-19 has been put on hold indefinitely. If they're no longer interested in marketing their big budget office renovations for prospective tenants, then they're likely bracing for some difficult times up ahead. Again, we invite your participation. Do want to hear from you. With us, Colin Yasukuchi, Executive Director of CBRE Tech Insights Center. Michael Covarrubias, Chairman and CEO of TMG Partners. They're a San Francisco-based development company. And Allison Arieff, who is Editorial Director of SPUR, an urban planning advocacy nonprofit. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. Listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about office space and the office market, and let's bring some callers on. Lee, we'll go to you first. Thank you for joining us. Good morning.
So my question is about the office at home. The environment at home is not necessarily conducive to having an office. You could have an alcoholic spouse or an abusive person, or an elderly parent, or be a single parent with children. So the assumption that by keeping everybody home, it's going to be safe and it's going to work is not necessarily accurate. We need to prepare for that.
Lee, I thank you for that. And I'll go to you, Allison Arieff, if I may.
Sure, that's a great point and absolutely true. And I think that tons of people are struggling with this for sure. And the assumption that it's an ideal environment for everyone is wrong. I think there are interesting solutions that can happen. You know, we tend to think of all these various corporate offices as like these monolithic, huge spaces, but what if there was a scenario where there were satellite offices closer to your home, like small places that people could go to and work, say, 10 at a time in a you know, with appropriate social distancing. And so people are together, but not necessarily in a massive amount of square footage. So I think we really need to explore different variations. We're looking at massive amounts of retail vacancies, so lots of small spaces available too. So this is really an opportunity to think outside how we've always done things. We may have always done them that way, but that doesn't mean that that was the way to do them.
And I thank Lee for the call. I'm going to read a comment from Carol, who writes, I've been working from a home office for 30 years. At the beginning, my days were full of interaction because talking and listening via telephone was how business was conducted. With the advent of email, my days fell silent. I sometimes thought of my office, my home office, as solitary confinement. I greatly value real-time interactions with colleagues. We must make a conscious effort to interact. It kind of coincides with your view to some extent, doesn't it, Michael Covarrubias?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I run a little company, according to the PPP, of 40 people. And everything that we have created is based on connectivity with each other and being creative. And that results in the culture. And I can't do that on screen. I can't have a meeting where, you know, we talk about problems and solve them. So for us, and it's sort of the middle-sized business who's got a team of 20, 40, 100, who knows, people, you can't have a position with your employees and your partners that is human. You, again, I'm a big anti-Zoom guy because I can't connect to anybody, even though it serves a purpose in some situations. And some people can work better on their own, depending on the job description and depending on the company. So this is sort of an 80-20 kind of discussion, you know, that nothing's 100%, but I think that the business world thrives on relationships with both your partners and employees and people who come into your office and you sit there and transact with them. You can see their eye movement. You do all the things that are, you know, what we're used to doing.
Well, I wonder, let me go back to you, if I may, Colin Yasukuchi, on this. Thomas writes, though Jack Dorsey of Twitter and some others have said their workers can work remotely indefinitely, I wonder if many of their team leaders cringe. The pressure to manage teams of workers remotely will affect productivity, synergy, and so much of the innovative work culture. Your thoughts, Colin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is definitely the case. As Michael had mentioned, you know, culture is something that is very difficult to replicate online. It seems to be working now because we had a culture beforehand and now we're in this temporary situation. Certainly working from home is a opportunity for employers in the sense that, you know, they could draw in a larger workforce really even outside of the Bay Area if that becomes, you know, more of a situation where they allow that. But at the same time, if you are, you know, one that allows all this work from home and your competitors don't, it really depends upon what the employee wants. So if the employee really wants a situation where they can come in and collaborate and socialize with their coworkers, and that proves to be, you know, more productive as we have felt prior to this pandemic, then, you know, that could also be a competitive disadvantage. But at the same time, I do see more people working from home in the future. I just don't think it's going to be dramatic, because right now you've got 8% of so-called office workers that work from home full time, and another 19% of them work, you know, at least one day a week from home. So the vast majority are still showing up to the office and only work from home occasionally.
Can I ask what the source of those figures are, Colin?
This is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay, let me get another caller on. Sid, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate the discussion of culture. I'm a marriage and family therapist that works with a significant amount of tech people that work in tech in my practice. And I've been really touched by how the tech industry really cultivates culture and cultivates diversity and inclusion and has done a lot to create a sense of family in the tech industry. And what I've noticed with a lot of my clients is they're really suffering because there's a feeling of loss of family. And especially for LGBTQ persons or individuals that might not have safety in their own family network, the safety that is created in the tech industry is really valuable, and I worry about their mental health moving forward.
Well, thank you for that call. And Allison Arif, let me go to you on this. What about mental health and working from home?
I mean, everybody's different. I think that introverts are super happy with this scenario and love it, and extroverts are just chomping at the bit. I mean, I think that there's no one answer. I will say that there are a lot of my two other colleagues on this call seem to think that no collaboration can happen online. But say in architecture, for example, there are tons of distributed firms who might have offices all over the world and can create entire buildings virtually. So I think it's a mistake to think that no collaboration is involved. And I don't think anyone is suggesting that we'll never see other people again if we work at home, but that there's some space for modification. You know, that the idea that everyone has to be in the office every single day seems quite outmoded.
And well, it would seem like maybe we're moving towards something where people work maybe a couple days and then at home a couple days or whatever. Yeah.
And of course, from a mental health perspective, I think we're all feeling, you know, as we're entering into, I don't even know what week it is anymore, 12. I think mental health is a challenge for everyone right now. We miss the contact with other people, whether at work or friends or family. And, you know, hopefully we can get to a situation before too long that, that helps remedy that. But of course, the workplace can be a wonderful place to find community, but for some, it can be the opposite. So again, there's no hard and fast answer to that.
I'm going to read a tweet from a listener who writes, "I do miss the break room chats and my coworkers. But I don't think I'll be missing the commute or the traffic anytime soon, if ever. Working from home allows great time flexibility and efficiency, and in my opinion, that outweighs any benefits from in-person work." And Martha writes, this is a good caveat to remember from Martha, "At the college where I work, students and faculty frequently came to class despite heavy colds, even flu, because they didn't want to get behind. That behavior must be strictly prohibited going forward." We'll get another caller on. That's you, Rachel. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi there. First of all, I want to just thank Mr. Covarrubias and his firm for everything they've done. I used to work at the California League of Conservation Voters, and I remember honoring the mixed-use work that you did. My question for you actually is like the realistic response to what somebody previously tweeted and Michael shared, which was, how realistic as a developer is it for you guys to transform or demise current office space and turn it into residential and create office space that then becomes mixed-use residential? And I'd love to hear your response to that.
Thank you for that, Rachel. Michael.
Thank you for the unsolicited plug. Yeah, we have been at my other side job at co-chairing this thing called CASA. We've been working on trying to find ways to increase the housing supply. We did it with accessory dwelling units and some other ways, but it is our Achilles heel, as we all know, and we've converted other buildings into residential around the Bay Area. It's not easy. You have zoning issues. You have the way the building lays out and depth and all kinds of other things, but I think that, you know, the kind of buildings that we're talking about break down into two different categories. There's the Salesforce Towers, which that's not turning into housing. And then there are brick and timbers that you'll find in various cities that could be converted. And so I think that's an interesting concept. As the title of this panel is called, "How Could the Pandemic Reshape the Office Real Estate Market?" That would be a way to reshape it, not blow it up, not, you know, 100% of anything. And as I said earlier, I think most of these answers are 80-20s. But I do think that, you know, the mix of uses is critical to making urban experience work in both or all three of the major cities and in between.
And here's Jim. Let me go to this question with you again, Michael Covarrubias. He says, could the changes initiated by the pandemic, such as working remotely or reduced schedules, suggest that larger companies could reconfigure the office into a decentralized model?
I think that's happened. I don't think we're inventing anything new. I mean, every major company in the Bay Area has its headquarters here and then has distributed offices throughout the country and or throughout the world. Whether or not it's distributed to folks' kitchens, I think different companies will do different ways of approaching that. I think that it also depends on the job. My fear as a CEO of a company is if my relationship with my partners and employees is through an unconnected physical attribute, then I don't know what their value is. And if somebody calls up and says they'll give them another $10, they might choose that because there's no difference being on screen with company A or company B. So I keep coming at this from the position of trying to keep a company connected as best we can. Other companies who have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of employees can certainly find a part of their employee base that this works for, and they do. We call them call centers in India. You know, there's lots of opportunities to distribute the work that these companies do, but I think that's already been happening.
And I'm going to bring another caller on. That's you, Rose. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Hi there. I'm a grad student at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. I specifically research traffic-related air pollution affecting marginalized communities. And during this time, it's kind of really shifted my entire research goals, because I think sheltering in can be used as a time to really assess how different workforces are working remotely. Like a previous caller was saying, how it's impossible for him to connect with his workers over Zoom. Maybe his field of work isn't the work that should be continuing remote. But there are lines of work like, you know, journalism or graphic design or a lot of tech industry probably, who are probably doing just fine working from home. And so I think it's important to really specify who we're talking about, who can be deemed as like a sheltering in success story versus who may not be able to continue working remotely. And then additionally, I think to add on to that point about not being able to connect through Zoom, you know, this is still really, really new. And we've only seen a few months of this so far. What's going to happen maybe a year from now when virtual reality or, you know, hologram technology has improved? I think we should have some optimism for what can be on the other side of this, as long as we're really approaching it not from a command and control perspective of you do this and you do this and you don't work here and you don't work here, but rather really understanding who is actually okay with this shift, who is actually okay working from their house. I've surprisingly been just fine working remotely from home doing my research. I'm a grad student. I'm passionate about my work, but maybe someone really, really needs that environment, that working environment elsewhere.
Rose, I thank you for letting us know what your experience has been, and also a couple good points that you made, especially about the spectrum of different jobs. And thank you for that call. We'll go back to you, Allison Arieff, and just ask a kind of provocative question, if I may. All this vacant space that we have now, what about the homeless?
Right. Well, you know, we are great at thinking about building in an upturn, right? When everything becomes more expensive and labor shortages are rampant and land use costs are stratospheric. What if we began to think about housing as infrastructure and figured out how we could build housing during downturns? And we could step in on some of these canceled projects and build housing there. I mean, I read this morning that there are 450 tents in the Tenderloin this morning. That's more than there's ever been. I mean, this is unacceptable in our city or any other. To have so much vacant space while at the same time having all these people unhoused is just unconscionable. And I think the idea that we could transform some of this to housing is definitely something that should be explored aggressively, and that it would be wonderful to see our regional leadership pay serious attention to it.
Allison Arieff is editorial director of SPUR, and our next caller is Quinn from San Anselmo. Good morning, Quinn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just want to echo what several of people have said. There's a very big difference between being an extrovert and being an introvert in terms of what kind of environment is comfortable for you. It can be very stressful to some people to be sitting in an office with people walking around and people behind you, in front of you, you know, on all sides. That can be very stressful. And I myself have run a company, not a company, sorry, I've run a team of seven people remotely. We got together a few times together in person. But then after that, as you got to know people, working remotely was actually way more productive. and has always been for me. And yes, I am an introvert, someone who recharges by being quiet. I am very sensitive to the fact that one of the reasons the internet works so well is that it's a way for people who aren't comfortable being in person all the time connect with each other. And I think a lot of folks don't realize that because they're on the other side of the spectrum. Thanks so much for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you for those thoughtful remarks, Quinn. Good to hear from you. And let's read something that Mark sends in to us. He says, and I'll go to you on this, Colin, if I may. Work patterns have been dramatically changing over the last 20 years, and now that means physical space and proximity could change. How many of us now check emails and work after the traditional 9-to-5 from elsewhere? And employers will seize upon the tremendous economic savings now paid for office space and parking lots. Colin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think as we've talked before, that certainly is the case, that this does provide an opportunity to, you know, have more people working remotely and reduce the amount of physical office space that you have. But I also think that the office space itself is going to become, you know, a more important gathering place for employees. And sort of towards that end, I also see potentially the central cities, the downtown locations actually becoming more important rather than less important, because eventually we're going to get to the other side. Things are going to return to some semblance of normal. People are going to ride on mass transit as they had in the past because it's necessary. And they're going to need a central gathering point to be able to get together and meet in person. And albeit that may be a lot less often, but you know, certain employers and certain professions, as many of your callers or, you know, and others have suggested that, you know, that will certainly be the case, that people can work from home as long as their job allows for it, and collaboration, you know, isn't quite as important as it is for some professions.
Colin Yasukuchi is executive director of CBRE Tech Insights Center. And here's a comment. I'll go to you, Michael Covarrubias. A comment from Ryan, who writes, I once worked in a call center, and anytime someone got sick, it would spread throughout the whole office. The setup was a huge open floor plan with almost 200 people packed into cubicles. Management was extremely harsh when someone would call in sick. I highly doubt, he writes, that management changed, as money over all else was always the goal.
Oh, dear. Yeah,
sorry to put you on the spot there, Michael, but I'm interested in your response.
Awful. I don't run any call centers. I do a lot in the legislative world up in Sacramento, both on housing and real estate things. And we are always fighting the battle of legislating for the bad actors. And you're always torn with stories about bad actors, bad landlords, bad something, bad companies. And you try to legislate just to solve that problem. And the problem is most people aren't bad actors. So, yeah, no, that sounds awful, and I don't have an answer for that. That's just bad. That's all I can say, I guess.
Well, you've certainly expressed an opinion, and I appreciate that. Allison Arieff, let me go to you. Comment from Bonnie, which I'll read, which is really a question as well. She writes, the recent experience of working at home shows us a feasible model for reducing global warming. It also makes the use of our built environment more efficient by reducing the redundancy of maintaining workplaces and dwelling places for each employee. Face-to-face interactions could be conducted in hotel ballrooms, exhibition spaces, etc. Your thoughts, Allison?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, Buckminster Fuller has an amazing quote about, and I'm not going to get the percentage right, but that our homes, you know, our homes are basically empty all day, and then our offices are empty all night. Bucky Fuller being Bucky Fuller, he would think those spaces should be in use all the time.
Well, in geodesic domes, preferably.
Right. So we can certainly make our homes more efficient, though I will add the onus of making a successful home office should not be solely on the person at home. I think companies are really going to need to step up to help people out in making sure they have a setup that's functional and ergonomic. As to the sustainability aspects, absolutely. I mean, the amount of time that that one saves by not commuting, the amount of CO2 emissions that are not being emitted has the potential to be transformative. I'll also say that as challenging as it is for us who have children at home, spending time with your kids instead of spending time commuting to and from the South Bay, say, is immeasurable in terms of public health. And that should be a sustainable thing to pursue. So I think there's a lot of upsides. Ultimately, I think employers will see that offering employees flexibility and autonomy can be a huge recruitment tool. I think so many people want it and are afraid to ask for it. And if one legacy of this could be an understanding that offering people something outside the less conventional schedule could actually be a good thing for employers, that would be great. And if we could all understand that this environment, if we think about what in it would allow us to reduce our carbon footprint, that would be an absolute win.
That would be ideal. And let's not forget the fact that things are changing to such a degree in the childcare industry, if it's indeed an industry, that has to be figured into the equation as well. I also, since you mentioned ergonomics, Allison, wanted to highlight the fact that yesterday we had a whole whole segment in this particular segment about ergonomics with home offices. And I think it would be useful for listeners who didn't hear that, who are stationed at home, to possibly look for it in our archives. But let me look for another caller, and that's you, Kathy. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Just a really simple question and thought. With all these empty buildings, why not give them to the public school system that has a harder time doing remote learning and trying to get us back into the classroom with social distancing and all these different things? Why not offer that space to our public schools and our other private institutions?
Go back to you on that, Allison. Your thought?
I think that would be great. I mean, my daughter is supposed to be starting high school in the fall, and I would really love for her to not be doing it from home. I think school is one thing that is not really conducive to full-time remote learning, obviously, because kids need to interact with one another. Again, I think that we should be open to any exploration of reutilizing space. I think if schools found it useful to take the floor of an office so that they could socially distance their students, then absolutely, that would be a fantastic use of space.
And let me thank you for the call. And Michael Covarrubias, buildings might be empty, but the companies still have leases. They're still paying, and landlords are using them to make money. They're not in foreclosure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to get around that there's an economic ecostructure that lives out there, ecosystem. And I think the use of buildings for schools is obviously a great idea, as long as there's a philanthropic, you know, owner, if you will. If you are a publicly traded REIT who has money from the pension funds that is the equity owning these buildings, a donation to a school is not going to happen. But it happens all the time with, you know, folks who have made it to the other side. They have decent net worths, and they want to give back. Schools are a great way to do that. I have partners who give money to UC Berkeley, to give it to small small private schools. So the need in on the philanthropic side is endless. We mentioned homelessness already, education, transit. We got to get our transit systems work. Those systems need to be in place to allow people to, you know, do the best they can in whatever their office environment is, at home or in a community of 100 people who love to get together. There's no right or wrong. There's just what's going to come back. And, you know, this is, again, as my opening comment was, nobody knows. We're all theorizing. And but there are some supply and demand issues that, you know, are going to be practical.
We're not only theorizing, we're trying to read tea leaves, and that's even right. More difficult. Michael Covarrubias, once more, just to remind you, is chair and CEO of TMG Partners. And Susan Wright says, work moves totally online. Employers will want to hire cheaper people who can work in cheaper locations, sort of like outsourcing. You can work for the same employer as before, but be paid much less. And if I can go back to you, Colin Yasukuchi, this is a listener who writes, what about businesses in areas like downtowns that depend on foot traffic from office workers? Also, many urban planners have trumpeted creating vibrant places. Won't we lose some of that if we don't have job centers?
Yeah, that will certainly be the case, that many of the downtown areas are vibrant because of the large daytime population that comes in there. And there is an entire, economic ecosystem that's dependent on that. as you mentioned, you know, the retail, the restaurants, a lot of them depend upon making the vast majority of their money over a very short period of time. Oftentimes it's just a few hours, you know, around lunchtime, and maybe a few hours after work. So it's really important that we, you know, think about and consider that as well, that the remote work definitely has its place, and outsourcing is something that is not new. It certainly provides the opportunity to, you know, reach out to a larger workforce, because prior to this pandemic, there was a severe labor shortage in terms of being able to recruit employees to be able to take jobs here in the city. And obviously that created a lot of pressure on the housing market. So perhaps, you know, a new normal that involves more remote work could actually be a benefit to the housing market.
Now, this has been a wide-ranging, but I think very illuminating discussion. I want to thank all of our guests for their expertise. Thank you, Colin Yasukuchi of CBRE. Good to have you with us. And thank you, Michael Covarrubias of TMG Partners, and Allison Arieff of Spur. Appreciate your being with us on Forum this morning. And that goes also, of course, for you, our listeners. Appreciate your listenership and your being with us here on Forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, Ariana Prale, and Blanca Torres. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our interns are Michael King and Jameson Weiss. Executive editor is Ethan Tovin-Lindsay. And our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. You can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And thank you for being a part of this program in these 2 hours. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.